You're listening to Garden Talk. Larry Mueller here. That applause coming from our audience at the Bayfield Pavilion. And we're switching topics a little bit. I mean, we're still talking about gardening, but we're talking about the trees and the shrubs and the vines in particular, because we have a couple of guests who know a whole lot about that. Paul Segan's been with us before. Paul is the DNR Forest Health Specialist from Hayward. Paul, great to have you back.
Thanks, Larry. It's good to be here.
And I think for the first time, Phil Brosh is co-owner of Bayfield Winery and Blue Ox Cider, and does a lot of cool things with vines and fruit trees.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Yeah, really great to have both of you with us. And I hope you'll join in. Questions, comments you have about trees or orchards or grapes, you know, you can be part of the conversation on WPR News. The number to call, 800-642-1234. Email to talk at WPR.org. Phil, let's start with you. Tell us a little about your business.
All right. Well, we are just located in the Bayfield Fruit Loop region on Betzel Road outside of town. And we grow about 30 acres of apples. We have around 8 acres of grapes, some pears on the property. And lately, we've been doing a lot of grafting to switch some of our older dessert varieties of apples into more cider-specific and perry-specific apples and pears for our hard cider products and then our wines as well.
So did you bring any along for me to sample? Or
I can get some down here pretty quick for you.
I'll probably be sampling them at some point over the course of this day or the next. Thank you so much for being with us. And Paul, as I said, welcome back. You know, Last year was a stressful one for trees.
It was a big year of drought. We talked about that in the last hour. And fortunately, we are largely reversing that trend right now. So in spite of the gloom outside, this is good news for trees. And we're hoping that this is really going to help them start to recover from the several years of drought and the insect cycles that we've seen come with it.
Yeah, you know, just a year is, you know, 1 year of drought, that's one thing. But when you get four, five, whatever, however many in a row, even the mature trees, I mean, I worry a lot about those.
Yeah, in some cases, the older the tree is, the more time it's going to take to recover. And when you add defoliation from things like spongy moth, oak leaf roller, jack pine budworm, spruce budworm, a whole lot of different defoliators we can talk about, that's going to set the tree back even further. And what we often say is 2 to 3 years of recovery is required after these extended droughts, especially when they're stacked with other stressors. So always a good idea to keep in mind that trees are alive and they need time to recover too before things like harvesting and thinnings and other disturbance around trees.
Yeah, so if you get four or five years of problems, it's going to, as you say, it's going to take, not going to do it overnight. It's going to take another 3 years or 4 years maybe to get them back into shape.
Exactly.
Phil, I want to talk about grapes because we always get a lot of questions about grapes, not only on Garden Talk, but if I have an entomologist on or something, the grapes come up a lot. What tips do you have for listeners who want to grow grapes?
I would really look at your area and the variety or the varietal of which grape you should plant in that. We use a lot of cold hardy hybrid wine grapes on our property. Most of them were developed through the University of Minnesota, and so they're crossing some of the more well-known varieties with grapes that were already native to the U.S. So they have that cold hardiness resistance. They also have a lot of disease resistance. Some of our favorites that we grow, we haven't sprayed anything on them since 2018, and they work really well in this region, which a lot of people are surprised because we're about as far north as you can go in the state.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of options now. We also have a little experimental plot that the UW Extension is running on our property where they have some seedless table grapes that the University of Minnesota is developing. So we're getting to watch. Jason Fishbach, our local extension agent, is in charge of that project here, and they put them in a couple years ago. So it's fun to see some of the more eating style grapes where ours are more for pressing and making into wine.
Yeah, that is great. You know, Christy in Chippewa County has a question that kind of relates to, I think, this. Let's go there. Hi, Christy. Thanks for calling.
Hi, thank you. Looking for recommendations. The red oak here are coming to oak wilt, but looking to replace hopefully with an oak because of, you know, the Doug Tallamy indexing the number of species that depend on oaks. I've heard white oak might be the one to consider going forward with heating climate. Do you have other species as well to recommend? Thank you.
Yeah, well, we got bur oaks.
Yeah, that's always a great question. Oaks are a very good species. We do have problems with oak wilt, particularly with red oak. That's why often white oak, swamp white oak, bur oak are good replacement measures where oak wilt is a problem, and they are more resistant to oak wilt. Also, there's a whole list of different things that can be planted, things like birch, things like sycamore, Kentucky coffee tree. I'd recommend going online. UW Extension has a fantastic list of what's called ash tree replacement species, but in there you can find a whole lot of different varieties. But absolutely, the swamp white oak might be a good selection in a site like that.
Oh man, I'm telling you, there's a swamp white oak on the UW-Madison campus that I love to go by. It is an older, just absolutely beautiful, beautiful tree.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So there you go, Charlotte. Thanks a lot for calling. You can join in too, 800-642-1234, email to talk at WPR.org. And we have a question from our audience.
My name is Pam Betcher from Gordon, and I have two unrelated questions. The first has to do with our organic tree, fruit tree orchard that's in good farm soil. Borderline zone 4. We'd like to introduce apricot trees and have done some research on the varieties that do well in that zone. Just wondering if you have any recommendations and a resource. And then the second unrelated question is probably more for Paul, which has to do, because I have had oak wilt on my property, when the best time to prune safely. Thank you.
All right, with the apricot question, we don't grow those on the property, so I don't have a ton of experience with that. But what I would say is look at the University of Minnesota's website, see what options they have. They've really done a lot with doing some hybridizing with those so that they are working in colder regions. There are a lot that I've been hearing that are working in the area. We've had some on the property, but we get a little bit more extreme sometimes in the winter, and I've seen some that have the tag on them, but there's nothing growing anymore. So they were there a while ago, and I don't know what year they were planted. We took the farm over in 2021. But.
As to the oak wilt question, oak wilt is a highly lethal fungal disease, primarily of red oaks, and it's become more common in northwest Wisconsin, northern Wisconsin. But one of the easiest ways to prevent it is to time your pruning right, and that is in northern Wisconsin and in southern Wisconsin, really, to avoid pruning oaks, any pruning, wounding, or cutting of oaks during the periods of April through July every year. And that's because small picnic beetles can carry the disease spores to these cut sites, a wounded tree, a stump, and infect that tree, and then it can spread below ground to neighboring oaks. And so if you want to be really safe, wait to the end of October to do any pruning. If you have to prune because a storm damaged a limb and it has to be cut off during that period, April through July, very crucial to be using pruning sealant, thing like a latex-based paint or a pruning sealer on that cut immediately after the cut is made. That can save the tree from a lethal dose of oak wilt.
Yeah. Let's take a question from Don in Iron River. Hi, Don.
Hello. Say, I've been having problems finding ice wine around here. Do you grow ice wine or make ice wine or any clues where I could find some?
I've got a bottle in my refrigerator at home. Go ahead, Bill.
We do have some experimental bottles that we've done from a couple years ago, but right now our production is so little that we haven't had it, because it's almost 20 times the amount of grapes to make the same amount of volume because it comes so concentrated. So we did hold one year. We held a row and we picked them December 20th. There was 2 feet of snow, so that was interesting picking grapes then. But I know there are a lot of growers in Wisconsin that are making that. I'm trying to remember if Wollersheim is one of them. I would have to look at a list and see offhand, but the Wisconsin Winery Association would probably, their website may be a good resource for that.
I think that bottle that I have in my refrigerator is from Wollersheim. So There are quite a few, actually, here in the state that do it. Jill has another person with a question.
Hi, I'm Barb Dorsweiler. We have property about an hour west of here in sand country with lots of jack pine, and they're looking pretty emaciated from last year's infestation, and I didn't know there was a jack pine bug. But my question is, what are the odds they're going to recover? I didn't know if pine trees could recover from that kind of damage.
Yeah, that's a good question. I'm guessing it was the jack pine budworm that defoliated the trees last year. And we had the largest outbreak of that budworm in the last about 15 years. Last year, we mapped about 80,000 acres, primarily in the northwest sands around where you are, about an hour west of here. So it was devastating to a lot of jack pine. We saw defoliation over 50% of the needles consumed last year. Some early surveys this year are showing that the population, unfortunately, is carrying over from last year, and it will probably be high. A couple of years of heavy defoliation where we're getting more than, you know, 30 to 50% defoliation of the needles is really going to stress the trees out. Whether the tree will die or not is going to depend on how droughty the soils are. Generally, jack pine grow on sandy soils, but there is a spectrum there too where you can have really nutrient poor sands versus somewhat more nutrient rich. Those poor sands are not going to support jack pine after 2 years of heavy defoliation. So I'd watch the trees closely, and if they do appear to start to get top kill, the upper spire, few feet of death in that, would be time to think about removing those trees before they might help the bark beetle population build up, which could then infest some of your other trees.
Yeah, a very, very, very good point. I want to go to Dan in Lone Rock because he has something about an earlier question relating to apricots. So let's go there. Dan?
Yeah, I just wanted to recommend a resource is Purvis Nursery and Orchard in Idaho, P-U-R-V-I-S. Robert's got some quite a range of pretty hardy apricots that he grows in cells. He used to live in Minnesota. Among those are the Harrow series, so like Hard Rand, Hard Glow, and then he's got some interesting stuff like from the more mountainous regions of Afghanistan and Uzbekistan and that kind of stuff. That's really really kind of cool, pushing the edges of the cold hardiness.
And just give me the name once more of the company.
Purvis Nursery, P-U-R-V-I-S. They've got a website. They're in Idaho.
Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call very much. So maybe a source. I was thinking about it. I was in Pakistan once, and I did have some apricots in Pakistan. That was a long time ago, but I remember them because they were juicy. Mary in Eau Claire, we'll go to you. Hi, Mary.
Hi. Hello.
Hi, what's on your mind?
I'm sorry, I don't remember the name of the tree, but it was developed, I believe, in somewhere near Bayfield, and it grows only to about 8 feet and stops. It doesn't bother any indigenous things. It has roots that go down and clean the water or the seepage from around places like in garbage dumps or whatever, and it's lovely. It grows quickly, and it is but only to about 8 feet tall. And people, I've been telling people about this wonderful tree for it must be a year, and everybody wants one, and I can't remember what the name of it is or where to send them to find it.
I have a problem like that from time to time. Mary. So I feel your pain. Paula?
Yeah, that's really interesting. The concept she's alluding to is called bioremediation. It's where those roots and that tree, its function, can take up some of the toxins in the soil. And I have heard that up at, I think it was the University of Duluth, they were breeding an aspen variety, Populus, that had those characteristics. But I know willow has been used, Salix as the genus, has been used for bioremediation. But I don't know specifically which variety she's talking about, whether it willow or popple there.
But one of those likely. Mary, thank you so much. If you ever remember, shoot me an email and let me know. You can join in too, 800-642-1234. We've got a couple of guests for you today. Paul Segan, DNR Forest Health Specialist, works out of Hayward. Phil Brash is co-owner of Bayfield Winery and Blue Ox Cider. Our guest for Garden Talk on Wisconsin Public Radio News. I'm Larry Mueller. Great to have you along for this edition of Garden Talk as we broadcast from Bayfield, the Bayfield Pavilion, to kind of celebrate Bayfield in bloom. It's a great experience for me to share, and it would be for you as well. That there are a lot of events coming. I just wanted to mention an event or two. On Sunday, something I haven't participated in or watched, but I think it'd be a very cool thing. There's the Blessing of the Fleet, which starts at 1 o'clock at Memorial Park, and if you got a boat, all boats are welcome to participate. It's kind of an ecumenical service and blessing ceremony, so the boats are blessed on Sunday. And then if you want to see some really good gardens, June 8th, so that's a week away or so, there's a self-guided tour of Bayfield's gardens. And that I have participated in, and I can tell you, it's a wonderful experience. See, there are some dandy gardens here. And you can find out more. There's a whole bunch of things going on. Go to bayfield.org, and you're going to find what else is going on in the community, and not only Bayfield, but neighboring communities like Washburn, where there's a really thriving community going. I love that place. Doing a little work downtown, and so the streets are, a couple of streets are a little off, but you can get through to those businesses, and I encourage you to take a walk through there and take a look, because you're really going to enjoy it as well. So we're talking about trees and orchards and vines with our two guests today, Paul Segan, Phil Brash. I hope you'll join in. And we have a question from the audience, I believe, so let's go there.
Hey, my name is Sue. I live here in Bayfield. And that tree, the wonderful tree that is going to save the world, it's a popple tree. It was for sale at Hauser's. I don't think they have any right now, but it's in collaboration with the university project. They'll definitely make more. And the other thing I was going to ask is, the Forest Service planning to spray for the spongy moth in Bayfield?
Good question. Spongy moth is very active in Bayfield County. I'll just give a little summary of what happened last year. We had our largest outbreak in state history last year, where we mapped over 375,000 acres. That was a state record. The majority of that defoliation occurred up here in northern Bayfield County and parts of northern Ashland County. We had defoliation down in south central Wisconsin and north southeast Wisconsin too, and we are expecting quite a bit of defoliation again this year, which will mark the third year in a row of this outbreak. The good news is early signs are indicating that the diseases, both viral and bacterial, are starting to take hold, and these populations are likely to start to phase off this year. There might be some spillover into 2025, but hopefully the lion's share will come and go by the end of this year. As in terms of spraying, there is no planned spraying up in this area by the Forest Service or the state DNR. The state DNR does not have any spray programs for that are cost share or state sponsored for private landowners, but private landowners can organize a spray with their fellow neighbors or if they have a large enough block and have that area sprayed. It's too late this year to do that. Spraying can be very effective, and so we've done it on some DNR property in the southeast part of the state on some of the state park properties, and those are largely done. Those are done now, and meanwhile, the DATCAP does what's called the Slow the Spread spray program, which focuses on new areas where the pest is not yet established in western Wisconsin. And those sprays are using bacterial insecticide, BTK, and those are happening right now down in Chippewa, Russ County. In the last couple of days, there's been spraying there. But really, for individual yard trees, there's a whole slew of different control measures that you can take that are fairly straightforward and practical, but they do take a little bit of sweat equity to employ. But there's plenty of information online. I can answer any specific questions on those as we go along here. But as far as spraying goes, yeah. We're not focused on this area, but we have plenty of information on other controls.
Thanks very much for that question. Let's go to Sandy and Stevens Point. Hi, Sandy.
Thank you. Hi, Larry and guests. Quick question for you. I have a Cleveland pear growing, and I noticed the other day that some of the suckers that are coming up are bleaching, and the leaves of them, and it's also occurring like in the lawn, my lawn and the neighbor's lawn, and they had cleaned out their hot tub, and I'm wondering if you think this might be either fungal related or chemical related, and if you, you know, depending on your answer, what you think I could do to help relieve some of the stress on the Cleveland pear.
Is it just on the suckers, or is it on the tree itself that you're seeing the coloration change?
Right now, it's just on the suckers.
I've never run into something like that, but I would imagine removing some of those, watching the tree closely to see if there's any changes on that. I tend to go lighter on, or taking some time to monitor things before doing big changes. With this situation, I would just watch it closely, remove the suckers on the ground. They're going to be sapping energy from the tree anyways. And then just seeing if that starts to change within the tree. If it's a fungal thing, you could do some different sprays. I know copper, captan, things like that. We use also some different horticulture oils, and sometimes we'll even spray, it's been a couple of years now, but we've used sheep's cheese whey, and it was to create a living bacteria on the leaves so that it has a harder time getting colonies that you don't want on the tree started.
That's really cool. Hadn't heard of that practice. That's pretty interesting. Let's see, Jill has got another question. Questioner.
Yeah, hi, I'm Brian from Duluth. Two apple tree questions. One is, I have three trees, and how do I even out the blooms? Last year, a million apples. This year, very few blooms at all. Is there a way to kind of even that out for yearly? And then the second question is, these three trees are kind of in the woods. I've got a lot of sooty blotch. Is there anything I can do to minimize that?
So the first question, with that, you can hand thin, especially with three trees. So there's going to be one strong fruit set within each blossom called the king. And you can pinch off the other ones. That'll help reserve some of the energy for the next year. We don't do that because we have too many, and you can chemically thin too, but it's a lot of, we just kind of have a biennial orchard. Some years are heavier, some years are lighter, and it kind of works itself out over the years. With three trees, it wouldn't be too hard to go through and hand thin. The sooty blot, you'll probably need some sort of spray for that if it's getting too bad. I'm not sure what you're using. Are these eating apples?
Eating apples, yeah.
Yeah, then I would, if it's getting too much where you're not able to eat them and enjoy them, I would look into some fungal sprays for that. Again, we try not to do a whole lot, and ours, we press everything to make hard cider, so I'm usually pretty light on the sprays, and sometimes it bites us. We've had rougher years where I probably should have. But yeah, you could look at that if it's beginning to grow each year and getting worse.
Thanks for that question. Linda in Wausau has a question, I believe, relating to forest management.
Hi, I purchased land that's in forest management, and I'm wondering if the DNR is looking at modifying their requirements for required removal of trees based on the role trees play in eliminating greenhouse gases and also the role climate change is playing in our state.
Yeah, that's an interesting question. You know, I don't know the specific answer to that. If there's any kind of modifications to what you're probably talking about is the Managed Forest Law, which is a tax program that landowners like yourself can enroll in to get a tax incentive to manage the land and forestry in a sustainable manner. But that would be a great question for one of your local DNR forestry tax law specialists. And you could probably look them up online on the DNR website to find out who's servicing that area in Wausau. I'm guessing they're out of the Wausau office, but that's a good point, and it relates to carbon credits and retention of trees for offsetting carbon greenhouse gas. I know some of the forestry county forestry programs are diving into those programs. DNR, I don't think has adopted that yet in the MFL program, but that is a great question to put to the local specialist in your area.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for that question. And Jill has another call from our question from the audience.
Hi, I'm Jerry. I'm from Iron River, Wisconsin, sand country. I admired a neighbor's grapevines. And a couple of years ago, he gave me cuttings, six plants. I kept four of them alive, planted them a couple of years ago. They're taken off on the trellis. They look great, and they're coming back this year again. I even got a couple of grapes last year. But is there something I should fertilize that with? And if so, what time and with what?
I would start with a soil test on that to see before you do any additions, or if you are able to, if you have a compost pile that you're doing at home, put in a little bit on that each year. But a soil test will give you an answer of where you're at. Do you think, is it extremely sandy there?
Yes, but before I planted them, I did dig it out about a foot deep and did put some good soil in there, so.
Most of their roots are gonna go much deeper than that,
yeah,
too, so that could be part of it. A lot of ours are 3 feet down where they're really getting deep. But I would do a soil test to start. I know you can send them to the UW or the extension agent in the area, and they can do it pretty cheaply.
Yes, UW Soil and Plant Analysis Laboratory. And you tell them what you have and what you intend to do with the soil, and then they'll tell you, okay, well, based on grapes and grapevines, here's where you are.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so that's pretty cool, actually. Dan in Brule, we'll go to you. Hi, Dan.
Hello, how are you today? Thanks for taking my call.
You bet.
I'm talking about plants on the forest floor, which are in bloom right now, is the Trillium serenum, I guess the nodding trilliums. And one, are they transferable? Is that even legal to do that? And number two, if they aren't, are there places where we can get them to, purchase and put in a nice little edge along the garden there?
Yeah, problem with that is they're growing in that forest.
Yes.
And they like it there.
Yeah, that forest floor has some characteristics that really help them thrive there. Whenever you're going to transplant, obviously you want permission from the property owner. I don't think you can do that on DNR property. County forests seems unlikely too, but possibly if there's a private landowner who's got an abundance, they wouldn't mind. But I would think the soil conditions to where you're going to plant them has to be fairly rich to accommodate a successful transplant. And so probably quite a bit of nitrogen, quite a bit of good humus in that media you're going to plant into.
Yeah, and quite a bit of shade.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You put them in direct sun,
they might burn up.
Yeah, they might burn up for sure. So something to think about, Dan. Thank you very much for calling, and I'm looking around here, and I'm seeing Alyssa in Sparta with a question. Hi, Alyssa.
Hello. Thanks for taking my call. My partner and I moved into our property about 7 years ago, and our lilac bushes are struggling, and I actually shouldn't call it a bush. It's more like a tree. And they're probably almost 2 stories tall, but they're not blooming as well. We did try to thin them out this early spring, which seemed to help some, but just wondering if there's any suggestions or if they kind of have maybe outlived their life expectancy.
Yeah, those tall ones, you want to whack those down, right, Paul? I mean, you want to take a third of those out.
Yeah,
every year.
You do want to do some pruning on the lilac. Now, is this a tree lilac or is this a bush lilac?
I don't think it's a bush. I think it's a tree, but there's...
Okay. Yeah, so it sounds like it could be Japanese tree lilac, which is related, syringia. But I think probably proper, make sure it was planted properly, and if it's not, that could be a problem with stem girdling roots. Making sure there's plenty of good mulch around that tree, around at least the width of the drip line, the canopy of that tree, and then also making sure it's well watered, and then doing some pruning every year on that tree to make sure it continues to grow vigorously would be some good recommendations.
You do get a root flare on those too, don't you?
Yes, you do. Just like a normal tree, you'd have that flare root that flares out right at the base where it meets the ground, and that should be visible. Anytime you plant a tree, generally you want to be able to see that flare. Otherwise, it's planted too deep, which can lead to stem girdling roots and other infestation from soil-going insects, beetles and such.
Very good question. Thank you so much, Alyssa. Linda in Appleton will go to you. Hi, Linda.
Hi, guys. Hey, great show. I have an infestation of buckthorn in my lawn, and it's recently reseeded, you know, to make it thicker, and I just keep mowing it off, but it seems to be spreading every year. Any idea what I can use on it, but I don't want to kill the grass.
Yeah, good question. Buckthorn is one of those really pesky invasive shrubs we have all throughout Wisconsin, and unfortunately becoming more common in northern Wisconsin. We want to keep it at bay with not just mechanical control like you've been doing by mowing it, but we also need to pair that with herbicide application. And so this is one of those plants that need the herbicide, otherwise they continue to grow back and can actually become sometimes more vigorous. We just sort of tick it off if we only mow it or only cut it. And so one of the common things to use is triclopyr on that. Common names are like Element 4 or Garlon 4. That's a heavy-duty brush herbicide that can be applied generally in the fall when it's the best time for uptake. You know, you can cut off or mow that plant and then spray the herbicide onto that cut area, whether it's a stem, whether a cut stump stem, or whether it's the cut stump sprigs that are left behind. But it's really important to do that, and fall is about the best time to apply it.
And you want to... I don't know that I'd want to just generally spray around. I think you'd want to be spot spraying on that, or because it's in lawn.
Yeah, it's going to be targeted. You're going to want to use the proper applicator and make sure it gets on the right surface and very specific.
And it works best if it's a cut surface.
Yes.
For sure. Linda, good luck with that. Appreciate it. Brian emailed us. They have 3 2-year-old apple trees that budded but never bloomed this spring. Now they appear to be drying and dying. Other trees in the orchard are fine. Wondering what could cause this. 3 2-year-old apple trees budded but never bloomed, and now they're on their way out.
It could be the drought in the area. Make sure they're watered, but also 2-year-old trees, you don't always want to expect fruit on them right away. The first years should really be focused on getting the root system strong, the structure of the tree. We pinch off blossoms for the first few years on ours, which is always hard to do because you want to see the apples. But it's way better for them in the long run. They really need to get that root structure down before they're really fruiting.
Thanks for that question. And I want to go back to you for a minute, Phil, because you used some non-traditional methods that I thought were kind of, you got sheep and poultry and in your orchards.
Yeah, Turner Road Farms, just outside of Bayfield, we've partnered with them, and they brought sheep over in our orchard last year and did our grazing and our fertilizing for us, and it was huge. I've never seen the color of green that comes in. It was almost instant. And Josh and Esme, who own the sheep, they would come by and they would move them about every 5 or 6 days into a new spot, so they were always happy. But it's huge. Where we have our older orchard used to, however long, long time ago, used to be lake bed. And so it's got a lot of clay, and we like keeping the tractor out of there. And the sheep were so gentle on that, so we're not compacting that soil. The sheep were really happy too. We'd see them scratching against the trees and taking naps under the shade. So it was, and it was fun to see customers go out there and hang out with them and have a glass of wine and sit by some sheep for a little while. It's a good afternoon.
Sounds like a good afternoon to me, that's for sure. You have some other, you did mention one other non-traditional method earlier, but talk about some of the other things you may be
Doing. So then there were also chickens in the vineyard, and that was mostly to, it was kind of a try. We had 18, so it wasn't a lot, but it was in one of our smaller plots, and they would eat the bugs, scratch up the dirt. We could definitely tell, we would move that through the rows about every 5 days too, and you can see where they've been, even from the previous year. Everything is a little darker, a little more full in those areas. Another fun thing for customers too, they'd hop over the fence and go say hi to people while they're drinking wine.
Oh, I love it. Let's see, I had a listener in Bayfield, the community, we talked about the Emerald Ash Borer earlier, and we're gonna get to that. I wanna do a little pondering on that. Paul, as we talk about the Emerald Ash Borer, and I've got to remind everybody that here we are listening to Garden Talk, and I'm Larry Mueller, and you are listening to WPR News. You're listening to Garden Talk. Larry Mueller here as we broadcast from the Bayfield Pavilion to celebrate Bayfield in Bloom. Great to have you listening in, and great to have Paul Segan, our DNR forest specialist out of Hayward, and Phil Brash, who is the co-owner of the Bayfield Winery and Blue Ox Cider. So questions, you can give a call to 800-642-1234 or email to ideas@wpr.org. And we did have a listener from Bayfield talking about the outbreak of the Emerald Ash Borer. Mm-hmm. And wondering what happens to the infected trees after they are removed.
So we did basically remove the state quarantine for Emerald Ash Borer back in, I think, 2021. So there is no restriction on wood hauling of infested wood throughout the state. But we recommend folks who have a tree removed by an arborist or a tree service, ask the tree service to keep that wood local when they dispose it, not to bring it too much further than the township, and certainly keep it within the county. And that is going to help prevent the rate of spread into new areas. So we know that EAB is going to continue to spread in northern Wisconsin and all of the counties in Wisconsin. We actually hit almost a milestone this spring where we had the 71st detected county of EAB, and we have just one more left to go. But we do want to really.
What's the one that's left?
Yes, it's in my zone, so the pressure's all on me. It's Burnett County, so I'll be looking hard, and we very well might find it yet this year with eyes on it. But we know that this critter is going to continue to spread. But the good news for northern Wisconsin is that most of the ash are either asymptomatic or still alive and thriving, and so there's still a lot of opportunity for folks who own acreage to work with a professional forester to do a stand assessment and to consider doing some salvage of the ash before that forest doesn't have much value and it's too late. As far as individual shade tree, there's still a lot of time to treat them if you move quickly. Plenty of insecticides available to treat, both over-the-counter and professional-grade insecticides that have fantastic control against EAB. So although it's gloomy, there is a lot of opportunity for those who are proactive with this problem in northern Wisconsin.
Dan in Reedsburg has a question. Let's go there. Hi, Dan.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call. I have a 75-foot pine tree that the top half of it, maybe more than the top half, died last year in the drought. And I really don't know if it was bugs as well as drought. I'm wondering if there's a chance for that tree to continue to grow now that it's wet, or should I have the whole tree taken down?
Boy, that's a good question.
Yeah, 75-footer.
75-footer. That's a lot of the tree to lose if you've lost half of it. And whether it's drought or beetles, I think it's probably a combination of both. Usually the way we see this work is drought stress leads to bark beetle infestation because the tree's defenses are highly compromised after drought. A tree like that is not likely going to recover very well. You know, if you let it sit, it could end up getting infested by more bark beetles and killed all outright, or it's going to have very malformed growth when that top is dead. So I would look at maybe a species you want to replace it with and consider having it removed safely.
Yeah, it's too bad. Sorry, Dan. I would hate to be losing a 75-footer myself. David in La Pointe, we'll give you a chance. Hi, David.
Thanks for my taking the call. I have two questions. First is mountain ash, and does the emerald ash borer affect those? I've been starting mountain ash from seed that I collect out in the forest, and then I put them in a pot, and sometimes it takes 2 years to sprout, sometimes 1 year. But I've got about 50 of them right now.
Ooh.
Yeah, the good news with that is that mountain ash is immune to EAB. It is not a true ash. So you are off the hook there. EAB is going to go after all our native ash trees, the green, white, and black, and the blue, small native down in the southeast, as well as white fringe tree, which is a little bit out of Wisconsin. But you are fine with mountain ash, so continue to grow those well. They're a beautiful tree.
And we have another comment from the audience.
Yeah, this is Gary again. And my question is about buckthorn. I'm battling a big infestation of that on the property. I've been doing mechanical removal. I've been stripping limbs off it before they go to flower or after, before they go to berry. Mm-hmm. And I'm looking at some mechanical devices that pull these things out by the root up to a 3-inch shrub. So I'm wondering if anyone has any experience with these tools.
Yeah, I think you're referring to a weed wrench that kind of leverages the length of the pole and pulls it out from the root. That is a good measure to take. It's going to be more labor intensive for sure. And the other concern with that is that if you've got other buckthorn on the site, it could create a nice seed bed for any seeds that get spread by birds. So you're going to want to actually focus first on removing the seed bearing trees. This is a dioecious plant, meaning it's got two homes, a male and a female. And so you want to remove the females that are those seed bearing ones first to make sure it doesn't continue to reinfest. But yes, then using the weed wrench is a fantastic tool.
Thanks for that question. And we have another question from the audience.
I have two questions. Peter from Washburn. The first is last Christmas I bought some chestnuts, decided I did not like them, put them out for the squirrels, and this spring in my garden I'm finding chestnuts. And I'm thinking, well, these might be good trees to transplant. Will they thrive in the Washburn area?
Well, that's a good question. Do you know what the origin of the chestnut were? If it might be Chinese chestnut or American chestnut?
No, they were out of Walmart.
Okay, yeah. Yeah.
Walmart chestnuts.
Yeah. I don't know if I'd recommend those. But in any case, yeah, it's hard to say, but if they are the native American chestnut, it's unlikely they're going to thrive for too much longer because we do have chestnut blight in parts of West Salem in Wisconsin, which is a long ways away. But some of these remote populations that have been planted in Wisconsin actually did end up getting infected with the chestnut blight all the way from the northeast, which I don't know how that's possible, but it happened. So there is a risk that chestnut blight could infect and kill them. There are some resistant varieties of chestnut. I believe the Chinese chestnut has been bred with the American to create a resistant strain, but the origin of those, it's hard to say. It's kind of sketchy, and I don't know if they would do well.
The second question, I have seven apple trees in the forest. I assume they were volunteers because this isn't a part of forest that was homesteaded. I have no idea what the apples are, and I was wondering if once I have them, can I bring them up to your place and you can actually tell what they are?
not to put them on the spot, I would probably bring them to the Hausers. They have a lot more experience with iodine. When I find things in the woods, we forage apples for some of our ciders, and it's just how they taste. I never worry about what they're called, or if they might even be something different, because the apples are not true to the seed. So if they were just volunteers, they could be something that's similar to other varieties, but I would go either Hausers or Erickson's in Bayfield here and see what they say. They would have a lot more knowledge than me.
Thank
as long as you brought up cider, we had an email from Dan who wonders if you have some advice for somebody who wants to make cider.
For hard cider, you really don't need much. You can start with a 5-gallon bucket and a $2 airlock, and you can still make good cider, but it's a lot of it is just what kind of apples you're putting in there. You want to have a high sugar. You want to have something that has a little bit of that astringency where it dries out your mouth, some acid in there. Otherwise, if it's mostly just sweet, it's going to be pretty plain when it ferments dry.
Yeah. So what are some varieties that work the best?
Around here, Cortland is actually a great one, which is a good all-around one. If you have crab apples in your area too, throw some in there. They add so much to cider, and you can punch up some apples that may not be the best by throwing in some of those crab apples.
Oh, and Paul, what trees do best in our landscapes, do you think? That's another question.
Yes, a good question. I always think of native trees, but I do want to, think about flexibility. With the way the weather patterns have been, we are getting more erratic weather, but we're also getting a little bit warmer climate. And they've recently, I think a couple years ago, updated the USDA hardiness zone, which means that we did get a little bit warmer bands of planting opportunity up here. And so thinking about a little bit out of the box of bringing some things up to northern Wisconsin that would not be as conventional, things like maybe Kentucky coffee tree, ginkgo, things like sycamore, things like even river birch, which traditionally did not grow up here, depending on the site. I would think native, but thinking about some southerly distributed species could do quite okay in northern Wisconsin.
You know, I've had many horticulturists on over the last few years, and Kentucky coffee tree comes up all the time. What is it about the Kentucky coffee tree?
Well, I think the bark has a really interesting texture. It's kind of platy. It kind of sticks out a little bit. So it looks very unique. And then also, it's got a big, broad kind of architecture, big kind of open branches that are not that are stout. And so you can really see the architecture of that crown. So that's always attractive. And then these compound leaves, these long pinnate compound leaves are really pretty. I think it's an attractive tree.
Well, you guys are attractive guests. Tell you that.
Thank
for
you.
Sure. Paul Segan, DNR forest and health specialist. He's working out of Hayward. Phil Brash, co-owner of Bayfield Winery and Blue Ox Cider. It's really a treat to have them with us. And, here I get to sit and talk on the microphone and act like I know everything what I'm doing and that nobody else had anything to do with it. But that is very far from the truth. It takes a whole lot of people to bring you this live broadcast from Bayfield. And we want to thank our friends, especially at the Bayfield Chamber of Commerce. It was so nice of you to help us out. And the Old Rittenhouse Inn for their hospitality. Couldn't do this without the support of our Northern Regional Manager, Paul Donberg, and Senior Regional Manager, Lisa Nalbandian. Really helpful folks. Our technical directors, Tom Blaine, Tyler Ditter, and Bayfield, Jeff Robinson, Lee Rayburn, and Madison. Clara Kniper took your calls today. She's here with her mother, as a matter of fact. And, of course, our executive producer is Jill Nadeau. Other WPR staff, Director Sarah Ashworth, of course, and regional managers Ezra Wall and Molly Gardner, Katie Lang, and other from underwriting, Diana Dudna, interim director of WPR News, Keely Baltina, and our marketing team. And, of course, we don't do it without you, our listeners. From Bayfield and Bloom, I'm Larry Mueller for Wisconsin Public Radio News. Thank you.